Good morning, everyone. Omi Tofa. So nice to see you all here and to share the Dharma. Usually want to thank the Buddha, who's our sponsor, and our founder, Master Sheng Yen, and all of the Fashers who make this possible.
大家早上好，非常高兴能够在今天见到大家，跟大家一起来学习和分享佛法。一般开始之前呢，我都要感恩三宝，感恩师父，还要感恩各位法师。
Okay, so we're going to begin with the verse for beginning the sutra, which you may have. So we'll do it in English first, then Chinese. So
在开始之前呢，我们先诵开经偈。先送英语，再送中文。
The unsurpassed, profound, and sublime Dharma is difficult to encounter even in a billion eons. Today we see, hear, receive, and uphold it, vowing to fathom the true meaning of the Tathagata.
无上甚深微妙法，百千万劫难遭遇，我今见闻得受持。愿解如来真实义。
Okay. Today we're going to continue with the talks on the Lotus Sutra. And we've reached chapter 6. I wanted to ask everyone, how many people are familiar with the Lotus Sutra, have read it? Any? Okay.
今天我们会继续讲妙法莲华经。我们已经讲到今天要讲第六品和第七品了。首先我想问一下，有哪些人诵过妙法莲华经，是比较熟悉这部经的，请举手。
Okay, so a lot of people haven't, and even if you have read it 1,000 times and have done prostrations for each of the 69,384 characters, you still have to hear it again.
还有很多人没有听过或者诵过，不管怎么样，哪怕你已经诵了一千遍了，或者是一字一字已经拜过法华经，你还是需要再听一遍。
The reason I say you have to hear it again is that this is a very complex sutra. There's a lot of material in it, and even going through just the narrative, the stories in it can be very complex and convoluted. And what I'm going to do today,because we're early enough in the sutra, is I'm going to summarize the parables that have come before what's happening in chapter 6.
之所以我会说，哪怕你已经读了一千遍或者一字一句的拜过，还是需要再听一遍的原因，是因为《法华经》是一部很深奥的，内容很丰富，很丰富的大经。其中也有很多的故事啊，预言啊，所以呢，在今天讲受记品第六之前呢，我会先重温一下之前几品提到的预言。
One of the salient features of the sutra is its parables or allegories, and I'll summarize them as I said. The sutra opens with the Buddha sitting in meditation in a particular samadhi.And from his orna, the tuft of hair between his eyes, he emits a light that illuminates 18,000 realms. And in my opinion, that in and of itself is a parable, is a kind of communication, but it's of course very hard to understand. So what the first chapter is about really is Maitreya,who we will find out is the future Buddha, trying to figure out what is the meaning of this emission of light.
所以在法华经一开始的时候呢，就是一个预言故事，就是佛坐在那边，进入禅定的时候呢，从眉间放出光，放光，在眉间放光，对我而言，这就是一个甚深的预言，虽然有些难以理解。这个时候呢，弥勒菩萨呢就问，为什么佛要在眉间放光？
Manjushri tells Maitreya that the significance behind this emission of light is that it portends that the Buddha will be proclaiming the Lotus Sutra, which is the sutra that we're talking about. And one of the many deepest meanings of this proclamation is that it proclaims the one vehicle, the teaching that both includes and surpasses the three vehicles that have been in mainstream Buddhism, namely the path of the Shravakas, or hearers, the people who listen to the earliest teachings of the Buddha, Pratyeka Buddhas, solitary Buddhas, the ones who have discovered enlightenment for themselves by studying conditioned arising, and Bodhisattvas, who are on the path to save all sentient beings.
所以弥勒菩萨就问说，佛为什么显这样的神迹在眉间放光，然后文殊菩萨就说，那是因为释迦牟尼佛要宣讲大法，就是这部妙法莲华经。那么因为这部经提到的是佛圣，是一圣，这一圣呢包含甚至超越了前面讲到的三圣，就是声闻缘觉菩萨圣。
Scholars have talked about these three vehicles versus one vehicle for almost 2,000 years. And there was a famous Madhyamaka teacher named Master Jizong who came up with 10 variations of how these work together. And the only reason I'm talking about this is to show how complicated it is and for people to be comfortable with not really understanding, with working your way to an understanding of the sutra.
两千多年来呢，很多佛教学者呢一直对这个一圣和三圣之间的对比呢做了很多的研究，其中是非常的复杂，所以有些有一个比较吉藏的学者甚至呢对这个佛圣做出了十种的演绎来解释和对比三圣。就是我提到这一点，就是想向你显示，如果一下子无法理解这个一圣佛圣的话，也没有关系，我们就是慢慢的来理解它。
Then the Buddha announces that he teaches by expedient means. And what that means is he adapts his teaching to the capacity of practitioners. And he does that in many different ways. And one of the ways that he does it in this sutra is through analogy and through parable.
接下来释迦牟尼佛就说，他的法门的教法呢是用各种方便善巧，是根据每一个人不同的根器来能够让他摄受，所以接下来他就用了很多故事啊、寓言啊来宣讲这部法。
The first parable is that of the burning house, and that shows an analogy where there is a house owned by a rich man who of course is the Buddha, where his children are playing and they're unaware that the house is on fire. To entice them out of the house, he promises them toys that they can't resist, which are a goat cart, a deer cart, and an ox cart. They come running out, but the carts that were promised to them are not there. What is there is a great white ox pulling a magnificent carriage. So the three carts represent the three vehicles, and this great white ox represents the one vehicle. And the Buddha explains that this was not really a lie. These were expedient means to give the proper, most supreme teaching to sentient beings.
所以在法华经当中，第一个很有名的寓言故事就是叫火宅喻。在火宅喻当中呢，故事里边有一位长者，他拥有一个大房子。这个长者呢就代表了佛。长者的孩子们呢，在这个火宅里边玩耍，并不知道其中的危险。然后这位长者就是代表佛呢，为了能够让众生，代表这个孩子能够逃出火宅呢，就用了各种方便善巧跟孩子们说，房子外面有他们喜欢的牛车、马车、羊车，吸引他们逃出火宅。最后，孩子们从火宅当中逃出来之后呢，就发现 并没有所谓的羊车、牛车、马车，而是只有一辆大白牛车，非常殊胜的大白牛车。所以在这里呢，牛车、马车、羊车就代表了三圣，而大白牛车就代表了佛圣一圣。
Second parable is that of the wayward son. This is about a young man who's fallen on hard times. He has left his family, and he doesn't even know who they are, but the family, of course, is the family of the Buddhas, and he has very poor self-confidence, somewhat depressed, and the Buddha, by happenstance, the father, sees him and brings him onto his farm and lets this son slowly work his way up from shoveling dung to becoming an important member of the Buddha or the father's business. And eventually he reveals that he, the father, is this young man's father. And this is a parable explaining, it could be understood in many ways, that the young man is a follower of the older traditions and didn't really understand the wealth that was inherent within him.
那么第二个比喻呢，就是穷子喻。在穷子喻当中呢，就讲到有一个穷子，他从小就离开了家，所以他并不知道其实自己是非常富有人家长者的儿子，所以他没有自信，甚至有些忧郁。当长者，也就是代表佛，在见到这个孩子的时候呢，他就用了方便善巧，没有直接认子，而是慢慢的接近这个穷子，让他从推粪等工作慢慢做起，直到最后做到家里的管家，最后才揭晓其实穷子本来就是他自己的儿子，这些财富他本来就具有这些财富。在这里呢，这个穷子就是代表了有一些就是传统的佛法修习者，他们一直用一些方法修行，但是并没有意识到其实自己的佛性一直是内在就有的，就像这个穷子一直是本来就是长者的儿子一样。
Next parable is the parable of the plants. Here, Buddha likens his teaching to a great cloud which covers the universe and rains down the Dharma. And it falls on a variety of different plants. Some are inferior, superior, middling. But they all get the Dharma according to their capacity. They're all different. And this, of course, is an analogy of the one vehicle adapting itself to the needs of various sentient beings. And it comes out, it appears in some cases as the three vehicles. So people practice according to their capacity.
第三个比喻呢是药草玉品。在药草玉品当中呢，释迦牟尼佛宣讲佛法的时候，就如同下雨的时候，世间的树木小草各自因其根气能够承受的雨量来吸收佛法，来从中受益。所以这里比喻就是代表佛法的一圣呢，它会根据众生根气的不同而显现出好像有三圣等等多种的方法来使众生受益。
The most important aspect of the one vehicle is the promise of Buddhahood for all. This is foundational to the sutra. And with that comment, this brings us to where we are, starting at Chapter 6.
当然这当中最重要的一个信息就是说，无论如何，无论是用什么善巧方便，或者是根据众生的根器不同，最终法华经最终的有一个承诺，就是说所有的众生都将成佛。这也带到了我们今天需要讲的，就是受记品第六。
So at the end of the last chapter, the Buddha declares to the Sangha, what you are practicing is the Bodhisattva way. As you gradually practice and learn, every one of you should become a Buddha.
所以在第五品结尾的时候呢，佛陀就说，你们在行菩萨道的每一位众生呢，最终都将成佛。
So, and these prophecies of attainment of Buddha have happened at various times through the sutra up until now, up until chapter 6. And what happens here is that four arhats are about to be declared Buddhas of the future, Buddhas to be. And that's the entirety of what chapter 6 is about.
所以在第六品之前呢，佛已经其实多处提到最就是在修行的众生最终终将成佛。那么在第六品当中呢，就是非常明确了，就是有几位大阿罗汉他们在修行，然后佛就直接预言了他们将会成为未来佛。
So this chapter is solely about the prophecy of these four of Shakyamuni's most senior and accomplished disciples. They've reached the stage of arhat, that is the highest stage possible according to early teachings. And it would be very easy to skip over this chapter. It really does not lay out any particular doctrine or tell a parable or make an analogy. But this chapter is very important in providing the details of Buddhahood for these four arhats in that it demonstrates the truth of the Buddha's prophecy according to the logic and inherent meaning of the Lotus Sutra. And these prophecies entail extraordinary descriptions and lengths of time which were baffling to the practitioners then. And we modern readers can be baffled by some of these descriptions also.
所以呢，在第六品受记品当中呢，主要是讲了佛的四位大弟子大阿罗汉已经正阿罗汉果的四位大弟子呢，预言了他们最终将成为未来佛，并且非常详细的讲述了他们的佛号啊、佛净土的国土啊等等，提供了很多细节显示佛所说的逻辑性和真实性，是一个很重要的篇章。但是因为里边没有任何的寓言故事，也没有宣讲什么道理，所以有些时候呢，大家很容易跳过这一章。
Another theme that runs through these early chapters is that of doubt and assurance. Practitioners are not sure of the Buddha's teaching. They've never heard anything like that. It's entirely revolutionary. Now, there's a scholar named Donald Lopez who describes these themes in the Lotus Sutra of doubt and assurance as anxiety. And in other words, that the sutra or the Buddha is worried about how it's going to be understood. And this will come out throughout the talk, and perhaps at the end we can come back to it.
还有一个贯穿法华经的一条线呢，就是说也是跟怀疑，就是说佛弟子的对最后一圣佛圣的一种不敢相信啊、怀疑啊，和一边是他们的这种不敢相信的情绪，另外一边是佛不断的一而再、再而三的向他们保证啊，就是说最终他们能够走到这条道路，最后能够成佛。因为对于先前佛没有开始这样大法的时候呢，大家都没有听过这样具有革命性的彻底颠覆他们以前所想象的这样的观点，所以佛是一而再、再而三的给他们安心，让消除他们的顾虑和疑虑。那么有一位学者呢 ，Lopez 这位学者就把这种众生对法华经这种大法的顾虑呢，解释为是相当于一种焦虑一样，就是有一种焦虑，如何能够来理解这样甚深的大法。
So according to what people who were practicing the early Buddhism understood, arhats are beings that have accomplished everything that was needed to accomplish. There's nothing more to learn, and they have literally left the earth. They shouldn't be visible. And so it's astonishing in that context for them to see these famous arhats here with the Buddha receiving prophecies about their eventual Buddhahood.
因为正阿罗汉果的修行者来说呢，他们本来以为自己已经达到了最高的程度，没有什么需要再学习的，也没有什么没有学习进或者还有有余的涅槃等等，所以当他们听说还有更进一步的时候，他们都会表示很震惊。所以佛在这里就预示了他们未来成佛的这个具体的细节。
Kumarajiva, the great translator of the Lotus Sutra, translating it from Sanskrit to Chinese, likened these predictions of Buddhahood for the arhats as similar to bringing someone back from the dead. It was that astonishing. Like almost all Mahayana teachers, of which the Lotus Sutra is a prime example, some of these ideas were so revolutionary and so outside of the understanding of the early teachings that they generated debate and disagreement about their authenticity, accuracy, and legitimacy.
鸠摩罗什大师就是法华经的翻译者，从梵文翻到中文的翻译者。他也比喻成，他也说这个对于正果的大阿罗汉来讲，告诉他们还有这样一个佛果，这样一件事情对他们而言，这个震惊的程度啊，就相当于把一个死人复活一样的，一这样令人震惊。所以很多大圣佛法的宣讲的道理呢，因为它太具有划时代性和革命性，跟先前的传统的教法相比，所以导致很多人就会产生辩论啊，或者不同的见解啊，甚至于会对大乘佛教的真实性呢产生质疑。
All right, just did. So time is yes. That implies that I know what I've said, but that's another question. All right, so continuing on. This idea...
Is that a no?
Yes. The idea of prophecy is not unknown in the early teachings. So in the Kakavata Sutta, in Digha Nikaya 26, the Buddha describes how in the past, the lack of skillful methods employed by human beings caused them to fall from lifespans of 80,000 years, which is pretty remarkable, to the 100 that we have now. So the Buddha predicts that all mankind will fall into chaos, but will gradually attain skillful means and peace once again, and their lifespans will begin to lengthen. At that time, the only sicknesses will be desire, old age, and death. So you won't have to get vaccinated or you won't have any problems like that when this time comes. So it's here in this sutta, the only place in the Pali Canon where the Buddha prophesizes that there will be a Buddha that comes after him named Maitreya. He's not described as an arhat, just his name is mentioned, but this certainly provides some precedent for future predictions and a path of succession to Buddhahood.
所以这里讲到法华经提到的佛的很多预言，也并不仅仅是在只有在法华经当中才提到，其实在巴黎的巴利文大藏经当中有一个南传上座部佛教巴利文大藏经中长部有第26部经叫转轮圣王狮子吼经当中就提到佛曾经描述了过去人类由于缺乏各种善巧方便从以导致他的寿命人类的寿命从本来的八万年降到了我们现在有的一百年人的寿命。佛预言了最终的人类将会发生混乱，并且但是呢最终又会慢慢慢慢的学习各种善巧方便，又重新拥有和平，并且他们的人类的寿命呢又会慢慢延长。在那个时候呢唯一的一种生病的病的表现就是欲望和老死，所以在这一部经当中呢，他提到佛最终也预言了，又一位佛会出世，那么他的名字叫弥勒，他在这里没有说弥勒是一个阿罗汉，只是提到了他的名字叫弥勒，并在这里边也是在这部经当中也是提到了对将来的一种预言以及提供了一个成佛的道路。
How might the Buddha have the power of prophecy? The Pali Canon mentions the powers of the Buddha in the Majjhima Nikaya, and the Buddha speaks of the three true knowledges that he attained when he was in the final stage of becoming a Buddha. First was the knowledge of past lives. Second was the knowledge of how karma works. And the last was the destruction of ignorance and the path to the ending of suffering. And if you put all these together, you can extrapolate that the Buddha could see future lives as well, since he thoroughly understands the causes and consequences of sentient beings' actions. On the other hand, it's somewhat of a mistake to try to understand how the mind of a Buddha works. There's actually a sutra in the canon which warns against that. But it's something that might come up in our thinking and our trying to understand it, so I brought it up.
所以佛怎么会有预知未来这样的能力的呢？这样的神通呢？是因为在巴黎大藏经中部当中就提到了佛拥有三种知识，三种能力。首先是他在最后成佛的阶段，他能够知道他对过去世所有的知识和了解。第二个是他对业力是怎么运作的有透彻的理解。最后是对无明是如何消除，如何能够终止，人的无明痛苦也有彻底的了解。基于这三种彻底的了解，你也可以推演出佛能够有预知未来，所有众生未来的能力，并且呢，因为他对因果，对每个众生的因果是彻底的了解的。当然从另一个角度来讲，我们也没有需要去分析为什么佛会具有这种预知未来的能力。
So chapter 6 also authenticates the teaching of the one great vehicle. That is, the very proclamation of Buddhahood totally eradicates the earlier understanding that arhatship is the highest attainment. Even though these four are fully realized arhats, they have not yet completed the path to Buddhahood. They can only do so by way of the great vehicle.
第六品呢，也再次证实了，强调了，就是说一圣的教法，也是宣讲了，刚开始前面所提到的，比如说先前的教法所提到的阿罗汉是最高的成就这一个说法，其实是不正确的，就拔除了这个说法。纠正这样说法，因为虽然他们已经是正果的阿罗汉，但是他们还没有完成成佛之路，还没有证得佛果啊，只有通过这个大圣这条路，他们才可以最终证得佛果。
So when Shakyamuni describes the Buddhahood of these four, the details, according to the logic of the sutra, substantiate their glorious destinies. This is also the first chapter in the sutra where nothing but facts are presented. And I have to explain what I mean by that. I take the words of the sutta, the sutra, as being evidence of factual events according to the way the sutra is presented. Other things like parables can't be considered facts, right, because they're stories which are giving us a deeper teaching. So in the logic of the sutra, these arahats are said, you are going to be Buddhas. So this shows in the Buddha's proclamation the reality as he sees it, and we are coming to learn of this one vehicle, how great a teaching it is, how all-encompassing.
所以当释迦牟尼佛在描述这个四位大阿罗汉最终将证得佛果，并且很具体的给出他们成佛的细节的时候，对我而言，这一章就是除了事实部分以外，其没有其他的没有讲其他的东西。因为我所谓的事实就是说，是成佛的一个证据，就像他们这样的罗列。
So, these prophecies continue, and each arhat is given a great prophecy which describes in detail exactly what their Buddha land will be, what their names will be, the name of the Buddha land, and the qualities of the land and the people that live in these lands, and the lands are described as fragrant, bejeweled, level, happy, etc. And they're great, and there are great numbers of beings that all of these Buddhas to be will deliver. And the Buddha prophesies the length of their lifetimes as Buddhas, and the length of the true Dharma, their false or merely formal Dharma, that's a time when the teachings are decaying. So there are a lot of details given here for the first time about what the Buddhahood will be for these four arhats.
所以在这一品当中呢，佛为每一四位大阿罗汉，每一位阿罗汉都具体的预言了他们的佛号是什么，然后他们佛国国土叫什么，佛国国土各有什么特点，国土当中众生又是有什么的特点，并且讲到提到了他们各自的寿命，提到了他们宣讲佛法的时间等等。
There are differences in each of the prophecies. For Mahakashyapa, who will receive, who will be radiance to Tathagata, his land will be called Radiance Virtue, where even the devils defend the Dharma. For Subhuti, who will be famous features to Tathagata, his land will be called Birthplace of Jewels, and he will always dwell in midair. For Mahakatayayana, he'll be called Jambunada Golden Light Tathagata, and he will build millions of stupas, and the four evil destinies will not exist in his land. In other words, hells and land and ghosts and that kind of thing. And for Mahamodgalyayana, he'll be Tamalpatra Sandalwood Fragrance Tathagata, and his land will be mind-pleasing, and his reign as a Buddha will be the longest of any of the other Buddhas to be.
所以这个佛给四位大阿罗汉成佛的预言呢，细节上还各有不同。比如说摩诃迦摄尊者呢，佛说他的号光明如来，佛号光明如来，他的国土呢，国号光德，他的国土当中虽有魔及魔民，但是呢，皆护佛法。那么须菩提尊者呢，他的佛号名相如来。他的国名呢叫宝身，然后他的国土，然后他会常住虚空，常处虚空。第三位大家瞻言，他的佛号是阎浮那提金光如来。他会大起各起塔庙，然后在他的国土当中呢没有四恶道。莫犍连尊者他成佛的佛号叫摩罗跋旃檀香如来，他的国土呢，号易乐，他是成佛的寿命是最长的一尊佛。
So there is an interesting passage in this sutra that I want to bring to your attention. Now this passage comes after Mahakashyapa has been given his prophecy. So the other three arhats haven't gotten their prophecy yet.So this is what they say in unison. Great hero, world honored one, Dharma king of the chakras, out of compassion for us, allow us to hear the voice of the Buddha. Knowing the depths of our minds, if you assure us of becoming Buddhas, it would be like being bathed in nectar, changing the heat to cool. Anyone from a land of famine suddenly finding a king's feast, but still cherishing doubts and fears,would not dare to eat right away. Only when instructed by the king would they dare to eat. So it is with us. Reminded of the errors of the small vehicle, we know not how to obtain the unexcelled wisdom of the Buddha. Though we hear the voice of the Buddha telling us we are to become Buddhas, we are still anxious and afraid, like the one who does not dare to eat. But now we receive the Buddha's assurance,We will be happy and at peace. Great hero, world honored one, you always want to put the world at peace. Please give us your assurance as you would tell a starving person to eat.
所以在这一品当中有一段寄送文非常有意思，我想在这边说一下。这一段寄送文是在佛给摩诃迦摄尊者受记以后，还尚未给其他三位尊者受记和预言他们成佛之前，有一段是这样说的。他说，大雄猛世尊，诸世之法王，哀悯我等故而赐佛音身。若知我身心 见为受记者，如以甘露洒除热得清凉，如从鸡国来呼吁大王善，心犹怀疑惧未敢即便时，若复得王教然后乃敢时，我等亦如是，每为小胜过，不知当云何得佛无上慧，虽闻佛音声，言我等作佛，心上以怀忧惧，如未敢辨识。若蒙佛受记，而乃快安乐。大雄猛世尊常欲安世间，愿赐我等记，如饥需教时。
Now, if you put yourself in the place of the arhats, which would be a very nice place to be, I would assume, and imagine their great learning and their great attainment and their great wisdom, and the fact that they are in the presence of the Buddha, hearing his teaching, yet they're still anxious. They still are trying to make this leap of faith, if you will. And this is perhaps what Donald Lopez is alluding to when he talks about the anxiety in the sutra.
所以如果你们把自己放在这三位达罗汉的位置来想一想，当然这是一个非常好的位置，如果你仔细想的话，因为他们毕竟已经是达罗汉，达罗汉他自己的成就和智慧。当这三位达罗汉听到佛给摩诃迦叶尊者受记，并且宣讲他的国土的佛号国土的时候呢，他们内心其实是非常希望佛也给他们来受记，来给他们宣讲这个，他们确保他们也会成佛。所以这可能就是前面这位Lopez 学者所提到的一种焦虑。
So if arhats can have doubts, imagine us.Any one of us can have doubts about the practice. Am I meditating properly? Am I using the right method? Have I understood the teachings? Can I end my suffering? Is that really true? Can that really happen? So one might think, I've heard so many teachings in practice for so long, but the practice seems very, very difficult. Can what my teacher tells me, what the Buddha says, can it really be true?So anyone could relate to these doubts and questions, I believe, that the arhats have. Not in terms of awaiting a prophecy of becoming a Buddha, that's probably down the pike for most of us, but in terms of everyday difficulties and strivings that we all have.
所以大家可以想象，这三位大阿罗汉，当他们听到第一位已经有受记成佛之后，他们都很焦虑或者有点不确定，怀疑自己会不会也成佛，所以求佛就是说这段偈颂，希望佛也给他们受记，描述了他们心情。大家也可以体会到，如果这三位大阿罗汉对自己是否成佛都会有疑虑怀疑的话，那么更何况我们普通的人在修行的过程当中也经常会有一些疑虑，比如说我现在打坐这个做的正确吗？我有没有很好的理解听懂了这个佛法？我什么时候才能够断除烦恼和痛苦呢？或者也有人可能会想我已经听了这么多佛法了，也修行这么久了，为什么修行对我而言还是这么困难呢？或者佛讲了这么多，老师也跟我讲了这么多，不知道是不是真的呢？或者当然也有人可能会当然大家可能对这些疑虑可能会感到很熟悉多多少少都会有过所以当这三位大阿罗汉在等待佛给他们受记的时候，他们也有这样一种迫不及待的这种略带焦虑这样一种心情。更何况我们每个凡夫在日常修行当中，更加会遇到这种各种各样的疑虑对自己的修行。
Okay, so that's pretty much what happened in chapter 6. And many of the chapters in the Lotus Sutra have a kind of cliffhanger effect. Giving you a tantalizing peek of what's going to happen in the next chapter. So, chapter 6 ends with this gatha about causes and conditions of previous lines, of previous lives, mine and yours. I am about to speak. Listen carefully.
所以第六品受记品就是给四位大阿罗汉受记，然后在这边就结束了。然后法华经每一章呢都有一些有一些悬念，或者说对下一篇的提示，下一品的提示。 所以在第六品结束的时候呢，他就第六品就提到宿世因缘五经当说汝等善听。
Okay, so chapter 6 was about now and the future, right? The Buddha is at whatever time the sutra is taking place, which is hard to place within time, he's talking about some distant future where these arhats will become Buddhas. Now in chapter 7, it's about now and the past, because the Buddha is speaking once again at the present moment to his Sangha, but he's talking about events that have taken place long ago and far away.
所以第六品呢，主要是讲的是现在和遥远的将来将发生的事情。那么第七品呢，就是着眼于现在和遥远的过去所发生的事情。
So this chapter, chapter 7, is called the Conjured City, or the Fantastic Castle City. And this is another parable which I'll be getting into. One very interesting thing about this chapter, in translation it runs about 30 pages, the parable in question, which gives the chapter its name, only takes place in the last third or quarter of the sutra. A lot happens before that, and I'm going to summarize that very quickly and just give a few details from that so we can actually get to the parable.
所以第七品呢第七品称之为化成玉品第七，但是很有意思的是当然第七品当中提到了这个比喻，这个预言化成玉，但实际上在第七品当中化成玉只在最后的不到三分之一的篇幅会提出来，在提到这个比喻之前其实还有一段内容，在这里呢我就比较简略的总结一下。
Now I know many of you are not familiar with the Lotus Sutra, so from time to time I like to give you little tastes of what it's like. And now I'm going to read a passage which is right in the beginning of chapter 7. And this is where Shakyamuni, our Buddha, is telling about a past Buddha who actually in a past life happened to have been his father. And I'm going to read the passage and you can listen to this and see what you can do with it with your imagination, because it will present truly mind-boggling numbers.
所以呢，在第七品的前三分之二的内容，其实是讲了另外一些事情。在这里呢，他提到在过去很久以前，有一尊佛叫大通智胜如来，然后呢，释迦牟尼佛曾经是这尊佛的儿子，其中的一个儿子。然后这个故事呢也非常复杂，我现在就读一段，你们就可以感受一下，它是多么的超越我们一般人的想象和思维。
So the Buddha in this chapter is called excellent in great penetrating wisdom Tathagata. So here is what Shakyamuni says about the time when he was alive. Monks, since that Buddha passed into extinction, a long, long time has passed. This is quite an understatement, as you'll see. Suppose, for instance, that someone took all the earth in a 3,000 great thousandfold world and ground it into ink powder, and then passed through 1,000 lands to the east, dropping one speck as large as a speck of dust, and again passing through another 1,000 lands, dropping just one speck. Suppose he proceeded in this way until he had exhausted all the ink made of that earth. What do you think? All these lands, is it possible even for mathematicians or their disciples to count all of them and know the number of all the lands that were visited?
Okay.
You want me to finish? Okay. Yeah. All right. And so the monks say, no, it is not world-honored. One. And then the Shakyamuni continues, monks, suppose the earth of all those lands for which that man had passed, dropping a speck, as well as those lands where he had not dropped any, were ground into dust. Let one speck of dust be one eon. The number of eons since that Buddha passed into extinction until now still vastly exceeds that number by innumerable, unlimited hundreds of thousands of billions of eons. Or Kalpas, right? Yet by the power of the Tathagata's insight, I observe that distant time as if it were today.
所以这段经文是这样讲的，他说诸比丘比佛灭度以来，他说的佛就是指过去很久以前有一尊佛叫大通至圣如来，大通至圣如来圣大久远，这个圣大久远大家接下来就可以听到到底有多么多么多么久之前。譬如三千大千世界所有地种，假使有人魔以为末，过于东方千国土，乃下一点，大如微尘，又过千国土，复下一点，如是辗转近地种末，于汝等亦与汝等亦云何？是诸国土，若算师，若算师弟子，能得边际，能知其数否？佛也，世尊。诸比丘，世人所经国土，若点不点，尽末为尘，一尘一劫，彼佛灭度以来，复过世数，无量无边百千万亿阿僧祇劫，我以如来故，我以如来知见力故，观彼久远，犹若今日。
There are many descriptions in the sutras about how long a kalpa is. And I'll just give you my favorite, because I actually think this one could be calculated. It's if there was a box in the sky that was 7 miles by 7 miles by 7 miles, in other words, 343 cubic miles, and it was filled with mustard seeds, which are teeny tiny, and every 100 years, one of those mustard seeds is removed. So it's the time it would take for that cube to be emptied.
所以这里可以讲一下一节到底有多长，多久远。我很喜欢举这个例子，因为我感觉这个好像可以计算，就像一个七英里乘以七英里再乘以七英里的一个盒子，然后盒子里充满了芥末籽，然后每100年拿出一个芥末籽，然后直到你把盒子里芥末籽都拿掉。
Okay, yeah. So these are simply unimaginable, jaw-dropping numbers, and in a sense, they almost serve to erase the concept of time from us because they're incalculable, unimaginable, And the Buddha doesn't say it seems like yesterday to me. He says it's like today to him. So distinctions of past, present, and future don't exist for him.
所以在佛经里边，时间的计量单位简直就是无法想象、无法计算，超出常人能够想象的这个能力。几乎要跟我们抹去对时间的观念一样。而佛说这么久远以前，对他而言。不是昨天，而是今天，就像今天一样。
Okay, now just a brief summary of what happens before we get to the parable, and it's this Buddha, great excellence and great penetrating wisdom, gives off light from his forehead, like the Buddha Shakyamuni does in the opening of the Lotus Sutra, and also causes light and quakes.To happen throughout the universe. And various Brahma kings try to find out what's happening. They reach the Buddha, they make offerings, they ask for his teachings, and he does. He gives teachings of various periods, very, very quickly summarized. And still people who hear it have doubts. So that's what happens.With some variations through the pages that precede the parable that I'm about to explain.
所以简单讲一下，在提到华沉喻这个比喻之前，这一品主要讲的就是有一尊久远劫前有一尊大通至圣如来他像佛一样，他是像摩尼佛一样，是在那边放光说法，然后有各种大地震动。然后天人看到这个景象就很好奇，也是问为什么，然后这尊佛就开始佛法，那么很多人听到之后呢还是有疑虑。
There's a tendency when we read sutras like this to read some of the details, miraculous, whatever, and just let them go in one ear and out the other, so to speak, not pay that much attention to them. But as I mentioned, there were light and quakes, and Fortunately, Master Sheng Yen wrote about this in the Sharingama Sutra. So I'm going to give a summary of some of the things he said about this, because all of these details are really very important and really worth pondering.
所以一般我们在经文当中听到佛显神通的时候，我们总是一只耳朵进一只耳朵出，好像觉得没有办法理解或者不需要进一步理解，但实际上这些细节是很重要的。所幸幸运的是圣严法师曾经对这些光啊，提到光和震动啊，这些所显现的神通呢，有一些讲述。
So light and quakes happen in a chapter in the Sharingama Sutra.And so Master Sheng Yan says, light is that which can be seen, and it represents hopefulness. Quakes can be felt, and they represent the energy of the Dharma. These two phenomena are sufficient for the Buddha to express his teaching. They are more examples of expedient means. Teaching doesn't have to be confined to concepts. The light from the Buddha's urna,is in the introduction to the Lotus Sutra, as I mentioned, and is really the first parable that occurs in the sutra, once again, in my opinion. So it has deep meaning that transcends the conceptual. Many may feel these forces, Master Sheng Yan continues, but some need words and concepts to supplement their understanding. For bodhisattvas on the first bhumi and above, which are, of course, very, very high attainments, light and quakes are sufficient to convey the teaching.There are many kinds of light according to the situation at hand, and one needs to have an affinity to the Buddha's teaching to see a given quality or kind of light. When beings in many different worlds see the illumination and become aware of each other, they are reacting according to their affinities and capacities. That actually happens in this chapter where...The light from the Buddha's urna illuminates all these different worlds, and the sentient beings in the world said, "Where did all those different people come from?"
所以圣严法师在楞严经的讲座当中呢，就提到光他说这个光呢是因为能够看得见，所以可以被理解为代表了一种光明和希望。那么佛经当中提到的震动。这种大地震动，这种震动呢，也是能够感受得到，它代表了佛法的力量，佛法的一种能量。所以这两种现象呢，是来佛来传递他的教法的一种方式，一种足够的方式。它也是一种方便善巧，因为这种方便善巧，不是一定要局限于我们所能理解的某种概念。比如说。在一开始法华经一开始佛从眉间放白毫相光，这本身也就是一种预言，是在法华经里第一个预言。当然这种预言的深意呢是超过了一般我们人类的概念所能够理解的深意的。并且呢很多人能够感受到这种力量师父接着说道，对于但是有些人还是需要用文字和概念，通过文字和概念来帮助他们理解这一层深意。但是对于初地以上的大菩萨，初地以上还是比较有成就的修行者来讲呢，只要提到光明啊、震动啊，这本身就足以能够传递这个教法它的信息。所以。但就是需要跟佛法有各种各样的缘分，深深缘分，能够理解到佛法用这种方式，佛用这种方式来传递他的教法和信息。
Master Sheng Yan goes on to say that light can be a signal, like the clapping of boards or the ringing of a bell, that announces that a teaching will follow.So this is certainly true at the beginning of the Lotus Sutra where Manjushri explains that this great illumination is a prelude to the teaching of the Lotus Sutra. Light can represent wisdom and quakes, merit, and virtue. At the level of an ordinary sentient being, light is our ability to help others. Quakes symbolize our power to influence and motivate others. Doing good may inspire others, doing bad will shock them.A great leader can do harm or great good that will affect millions. Light radiates and affects the entire world. Finally, Master Shengyan says that this light is the true light of the Buddha's wisdom. You can, he said, walk in broad daylight and still be in darkness without it.
所以圣严法师呢接下来说，他说有时候佛放光，眉间放光也是一种信号，就像在我们修行的时候打板啊，有各种钟声啊等等信号一样，就是预示着佛要开始宣讲佛法了。这当然对，特别是在法华经当中也的确如此啊，佛在眉间放光，然后开始宣讲法华经。然后文殊菩萨也解释了为什么佛在眉间放光，这也是预示了佛要开讲法华经了。那么光明可以是智慧的代表，智慧的象征，然后大地的震动呢也代表了功德。那么对于一般在我们一般凡夫的层面来讲呢，光是象征了我们帮助众生的能力，然后震动呢可以用来象征我们能够影响他人或者激励他人的一种能量。比如说你做善事呢可以启发或者激励很多人，那么做坏事呢也会让很多人感到震惊。所以一个伟大的领导者，如果他做坏事或者做好事呢，他就会影响成千上万的人。所以光就是比喻了他的放光，它的光明啊，可以影响整个世界，影响很多人。最后呢，圣严法师提到，他说，在这里的，在经文当中所提到的光啊，是佛的一种，是佛的智慧。他说，你很有可能走在一个白天，走在白天就是很光明、很光亮的一个地方，却始终，如果没有佛的智慧呢，却始终如同在黑暗当中一样。
There are innumerable sentient beings who come to this Buddha, excellence and great penetrating wisdom, Tathagata, and they ask for his teachings to alleviate the sufferings of sentient beings. And this Buddha recognizes that there are still some he've worked with, even for millennia, who have doubts, and he recognizes the weakness that ordinary sentient beings have because they are enthralled to their desires and their habitual tendencies.
所以呢，这无量的众生呢，来到佛处呢，请求佛呢，宣讲佛法，能够让他们消除、缓解他们的痛苦。那么佛呢，在宣讲的过程也意识到众生有可能有疑虑啊，等等，因为众生有自己的业力习性等等。
So all of these examples of doubt and uncertainty and perhaps anxiety set the stage for the parable of the conjured city. So here the Buddha asks us, this is the parable, to suppose that there is a road 500 leagues long that is inaccessible and frightening, but there is a group of people that are willing to travel it to find some rare treasures. They are led by an experienced leader, who we know as the Buddha, who leads, who knows the road well and has, this particular guide has pretty extraordinary powers. The group becomes exhausted and they want to turn back. The guide thinks this is a shame and he conjures up a castle city 300 leagues down the road. Now, once again, this is in the logic of the sutra. It's hard to see how they could see something so far, but in this particular case, they can. They see this shining city way down the road, right in front of them, and it's very alluring. So he points out this city to them. It's a distance of some 300 leagues, and he tells them they can stop and rest there before they continue on their journey. He warns them that they should continue on when they are rested in order to find the treasures. After all, that's what they started out to do in the first place. The group is overjoyed, and they go to the city, and they rest in comfort. This guide sees that the group is comfortable, and he makes the city disappear at that moment. He tells them, "We have to go now. The place of the treasures is close. I created this large, fantastic city a little while ago just for you to rest in."
所以化成玉品呢，就是在这样的，就是佛欲知道众生会有各种的疑虑啊、不确定性啊、等等想法的这个背景下呢，就讲了这样一个比喻，就是说，假设佛让大家假设想象有这样一个故事，就是说有500由旬长的路啊，充满了不确定性，而且道路很艰难，然后有一批人呢。他们在这个路上走着，在寻找宝藏，当然他们是有一位非常有经验的向导带着他们。那么这位有经验的向导就是佛。然后这一队人呢，已经走得很累了，然后呢，他们没有信心了，想要往回走了，想要放弃了。那么这个时候呢，向宝就觉得已经走了这么久，想放弃很可惜，所以呢，他就幻化出了在300由旬的路上幻化出了一座城。与险道中幻化这样一座城，然后呢，就他当然他不是普通的向导了，他是佛，然后他就指着这个幻化的城，告诉大家说：“你们看啊，在这个远处有一座城，我们只要走到那里，我们就可以我们就可以休息了。”所以呢，大家就又重新有了信心，然后又开始走，然后走到这个城当中呢，他们就有一个歇脚休息的地方。但是呢，当这个向导看到这一队人都已经有了休息之后呢，他就让这座城消失了，他就告诉他们，其实这不是我们的目的地啊，我们还必须要继续赶路，但是我们这个宝藏地呢已经很接近了，我幻化出这座城呢，就是让大家休息一下，这样呢你们可以继续上路。
If I were one of those travelers in that group, I think I would find this experience of having the city disappear very traumatic. I mean, imagine you're sitting in a restaurant, you're at a spa, you're listening to music, fine food, beautiful ambiance, and boom, you're in the desert the next moment. Now, for me, that would be my attachments, my habitual tendencies.But this is even a deeper teaching because the Buddha is equating that city with the fulfillment of the earlier teachings, this beautiful city, saying these arhats thought they had it made in the shade, right? That they had gotten to the end of the line. And then the Buddha is, in one sense, he's pulling the rug right out from under their feet, but he's replacing it.With the one vehicle, this great ox and the chariot, and giving them so much more than they could even have imagined.
所以假设你是这一队旅行者当中一员，然后你以为已经到达目的地，然后好像在一个度假的一个很舒服的一个地方，喝着小酒，然后泡着澡，然后很开心很舒服的时候，突然之间这个导游跟你说，其实这个是我变出来的，然后现在要突然变没了，然后你发现自己还是在沙漠当中，你肯定会很崩溃很抓狂。当然这其实是描述了我对这样一种这种化成的一种执着，不想继续上路。但虽然佛陀对他们说，比较残忍对他们说，其实你们还没有到达终点，这只是暂时的休息和舒服而已。但是佛也给了他们一个更好的更美的一个憧憬，就是说这个成佛这条道路。
The Buddha says that he is like that guide and knows that the road of life and death is hard, but it must be taken.Buddha says, if living beings only hear of the one Buddha vehicle, they will not want to see the Buddha or to approach him, but think that the Buddha way is long and never ending, and success is something that can be attained only after long suffering from arduous work.
所以释迦牟尼佛认为他所比如说他不同的教法适用于不同众生，他之所以这么多善巧教法也是有原因的，也是值得这样去做的。因为如果一开始就跟众生宣讲最高的佛身的话，那么大家可能会觉得实在是太远太累了，根本就做不到，可能就没有力量去努力了。但是可以开始的时候先用一些方便善巧，让众生能够有一些成就之后，有一些力量之后，然后再宣讲佛身，这样可以能够引他们慢慢成佛。
The Buddha said that what he taught earlier in his earlier teachings was two kinds of nirvana, which isn't exactly explained in the sutra, but I believe what he's referring to is what's called nirvana with remainder, where you have transcended all suffering, all vexations, but you still have a body. And then when you die as an arhat, you get rid of mind and body, and then attain nirvana without remainder. And in the Buddha's nirvana, the nirvana of the one vehicle, there's no need for you to die.
所以在一开始呢，释迦牟尼佛还宣讲了，就是教授了有两种涅槃，一种是有余涅槃，还有一种是无余涅槃。那么有余涅槃还是有生有死的，但是无余涅槃就没有生死，就没有死这个事情。
Okay, now let's tie this parable in with the first part of the chapter, right? And basically, what I said about that is that all of the events surrounding excellence and penetrating Buddha show the Buddha's power and how he affects sentient beings, but how he recognizes that there is doubt. And so we can see the great devotion, hardship, wisdom, and accomplishment of great penetrating wisdom Buddha in this earlier part of the chapter. So we witness the training of his son Shakyamuni, and we're told once again of the suffering of sentient beings and the medicine and the reign of the Dharma that can eradicate this suffering. And so the Buddha has gone through this process of saving sentient beings for eons, and he's dealing with the doubt, as I mentioned earlier.
这里就讲到，我们前面已经提到了很多，这个在化成玉品之前提到的内容，就是大通智胜如来以及他的那个释迦牟尼佛也是他的儿子之一。他们是怎么样度化众生，然后了解到这个众生对这个大道最终的佛圣是有一些疑虑和顾虑的，然后怎么样能够度化众生。
Let's talk about the Buddha's position here. Earlier in the second chapter, chapter on expedient means, the Buddha tells about what happened right after he reached enlightenment. He wandered aroundthe Bodhi tree for 3 weeks, wondering what to do. And it wasn't until Indra or Brahma came down and told him that suffering beings needed his teachings. And he said that my teachings are hard to understand. They're very subtle. They can be off-putting. And so the Buddha's position is that here it is, I've got this wonderful Dharma, but it's just hard to get, and I have to figure out a way of making it understandable and practicable by all of these sentient beings that I want to suffer. Oh, I want to. That's good. No, we don't want. We're trying to get rid of suffering. I'm suffering right now. Now the to alleviate the suffering of sentient beings.
所以在第二品当中，其实就已经提到佛在就是佛成佛之后立刻发生了什么事情，就是佛在菩提树下徘徊了三周，因为他当时不知道怎么样向众生宣讲如此微妙甚深的大法，那个时候就是有天人就是请佛说法，然后佛就说我想传递的这个信息它是非常微妙和甚深的，我不知道怎么样把它变成一种能够让世人了解而且是能够着手来修行的这样一条道路。所以因为佛最终是要帮助众生断烦恼成佛果。
Okay, now I'm going to go back to the parable of the conjured city, and I'm going to compare it with some of these other parables that have come before in the sutra.So, note that the initial road, when these travelers are seeking a treasure, it's not a false road. That road that these seekers are on is the same road that they will continue on in the one vehicle. They are on the true path. It's just that it's long and difficult and must be traveled to its true endpoint. So contrast this with the parable of the burning house. In that story, the children are promised toys that will entice them out of the burning house. However, the goat, the deer, and the ox cart, representing the three teachings, never really seem to exist. They're just concepts in this parable. They begin as kind of illusions. So whatever their supposed quality, just the description of them seems to be alluring to the children. So I, once again, try to put myself in these parables sometime. And I imagine I'm one of the children in the burning house. And I guess maybe some of the children say, wow, a goat cart. Wow, I'm getting out of here. I got to see this goat cart. Some might say, wow, a deer cart. Or others would say, an ox cart. Somehow, something appeals to these different children, and they run out according to what seems to be most enticing.
所以我们回到化成玉品来说，我们需要注意的是，化成玉品当中，佛陀引导大家走的这条路呢，并不是一条假的或者是一条错误的路，它还是真实的这个修行之路。只不过呢，这条路呢非常的长，也非常的艰难。你必须要一直走，走到底，走到成佛为止。所以这个比喻跟火宅浴呢就有一些区别，因为在火宅浴当中，长者给孩子们他们承诺，就是牛车、羊车、马车这个三辆车，鹿车，其实是幻化出来，是就是说是引导他们逃出火宅的一个方便善巧。但他们出来之后就会发现，其实没有这三辆车。如果把我们放在这个小孩的位置的话，他们可能会想，哇，有一个羊车啊，我要一个鹿车啊，我要一个牛车，但实际上他们出来之后才发现，其实是并没有这三辆车。
So they couldn't have really known what these carts were. They'd never seen them. But whatever it was, the pitch that the father / Buddha gave was really effective. And this is a good thing too, because the children were saved from the fire and by extension by from suffering. So the idea is that there were goodies to be had and they ran out. And the house and the fire were real, but the exit strategy, following the true path to liberation, that had to be presented with artifice. In other words, the Buddha had to trick the children. We, the children are us, we sentient beings. And that's our plight. We have to be enticed in a variety of different ways before we set out on the path. And as we're on the path, various times when our interest or our energy flags, we need things that will rejuvenate us and energize us to continue on.
所以呢，在火宅浴当中呢，其实小孩子并不知道他们最终会得到一些什么，但是呢，这个佛提出来的这三车呢，对他们很有吸引力，而且是很有效的，最终让他们出了火宅，当然是件好事。所以佛师用了这样，其实是用了一个善巧方便把这个众生啊从这个火宅里给骗了出来。但是就像我们在修行的路上，偶尔也是需要一些方便善巧，能够让我们重新振作起来，重新鼓起勇气继续走下去。
So one of the things in comparing those two parables I'm trying to show is that they look at the three vehicles in different ways. One way, in the first, the parable of the burning house, it's kind of an illusion. But in the parable of the conjured city, it's real, but it's misperceived, and it's not followed to its logical conclusion. So all of these parables are giving us a little bit of a different view of how we can understand this great vehicle.
所以在火宅喻当中呢，这个火宅等等当然是都是虚幻的。然后在这个化成喻当中，这个化成呢，也是虽然说是这个道路本身是真实的，但是这个化成本身它也是虚幻。所以通过比喻呢，都是给我们从不同的角度来理解，来回味这个一圣佛圣到底是什么样子的。
Okay, now let's turn to the parable of the wayward son in chapter 4. So he's someone who seems to become separated from his true nature, right? He experiences only hardship and suffering because he has somehow turned away from his parents' love and abandoned his birthright and wealth. Only by fortuitously coming in contact with his father, who's the Buddha, by happening upon his farm, does the son find a position where he can gradually gain confidence and allow his father to reveal himself. The son was basically clueless, and if he hadn't encountered the Buddha, he would have remained clueless. The artifice here was the Buddha's withholding of his true identity and connection to the son. This always existed. The understanding is that there was never any real separation. It only existed because of the son's confusion and his lack of confidence.
然后我们来讲这个穷子喻第四品当中提到穷子喻。这个穷子呢好像是他和他自己他的真正的佛性呢这个被分隔开来，他没有能够见到自己真正的佛性，因为他只体验的 对他而言，他没有见到自己巨大的与生俱来的财富，他体验到的是贫穷和困苦，而且呢是被父母所抛弃呢，没有得到父母的爱等等。但到后来他被长者认回来之后呢，他也是慢慢通过长者慢慢才帮他恢复对自己的自信，最后才揭示他其实本来就是与生俱来就是有这些财富的。这个就像是佛用善巧慢慢揭示我们本来就是跟佛性是从来就没有分开过，只不过是由于我们的无明和困惑，缺乏自信而不能得见而已。
So these parables really have to be studied again and again and really have to be pondered and compared, I believe, in order to really see where they're getting at. So now let's turn to the last parable before the conjured city, which is that of the plants. And that makes explicit that the Buddha's wisdom is available to all according to their capacity. The reign of Dharma reaches everyone impartially. It does not take sides, and its life-giving waters enable all beings to flourish and bloom like flowers. Renhua, as the sutra says, human flowers. This parable doesn't use artifice so much as analogy, a metaphor of a great cloud raining down Dharma. This signifies the complete saturation and availability of the Buddha's teaching to every kind of being. The Buddha recognizes all the kinds of practice that existed before the Lotus Sutra was given, but none of these can match the reign of the great vehicle.
所以在那之后呢，就是提到教草喻品，在这里边呢，佛很明确的提到，就是说根据众生的根器不同，但是佛法对众生的对待上是没有任何的区别的，就像一个下雨与大法雨的时候，所有的草木都根据他们自己的根器会从中受益。下雨本身对他们的滋养是没有区别对待的。在这里呢就提到了佛法对众生的各种众生的有利之处，然后佛陀呢也确认了，就是在宣讲《法华经》以前所开示的各种各样的佛法方法，都是针对各种不同根器的众生的需要而宣讲的。所以但是在宣讲《法华经》之前，所有的佛法或者方便善巧是没有办法，是无法和最终的这个大乘佛一圣来相媲美。
So,As I mentioned earlier, the truth of the Lotus Sutra is the promise of Buddhahood, which is an astonishing promise, especially if you consider the plight of us ordinary sentient beings who somehow can't read a train schedule or know how to open a box with a new radio in it or put on our pants right side facing right side. So here we are with our vexations, and we're reading about this astonishing promise that the Lotus Sutra gives us. So here's the Buddha's plight. How does he convey his teaching to us? He does it through expedient means, and this he kind of spoon feeds us. And so the entire Lotus Sutra is the nourishment that he is feeding us. And what we are nourished by are these parables, metaphors, and analogies that can enable us to go and see beyond ourselves and engage in proper practice. This requires faith and patience. So the message is accept the great white ox vehicle, even if it wasn't what you thought it would be. Know that your true wealth is inside you and accept the Dharma rain as best you can, knowing that if you approach and practice with sincerity, you are on the right path.
所以法华经很重要的一个信息呢，其实是佛对众生的一个承诺，就是众生都会成佛这样一种承诺，这样一种确认。所以这是贯穿法华经的一个很重要的信息。在法华经当中呢，佛用了各种各样方便善巧的比喻来一点一点的传递这个信息，就像是用汤勺喂我们吃饭一样，一点一点的喂进去。然后整部法华经就像是一个营养，它所喂给我们的营养品一样，通过各种寓言啊、故事啊、比喻，能够让我们超越我们现在自己所见到的烦恼啊，还有我们自己各种凡夫各种局限啊，能够超越我们这种局限性来理解佛所宣讲的这种佛圣这种大法。当然这个过程是需要大家的信心和耐心，因为就像最终能够，就像我们能够接受最终的大白牛车一样，或许它不是你所想象的，但是呢它最终我们要认识到它就是我们自己内在的宝藏，一直和我们没有分开过，然后最终能够接受这样的大法语，并且拥有这样的信心，就是只要我们用正确的方法走在这条路上，那么我们走的这条路肯定是正确的道路。
So to return to the conjured city and fold that into some of the comparisons I'm making, as I said, it's clear in this parable that it's not the right road that's in question exactly, but one's endurance and patience and the correct view of what the path entails. So the Buddha recognizes the difficulty and the attraction of stopping and falsely labeling your journey as completed. And actually, from this, you can really extrapolate the whole wrong view of labeling and judging just from that idea. So this is why the guide, the Buddha, conjures an illusion of a city. And this is actually in the Sutra of Complete Enlightenment. There's one method of teaching called Samapatti, where you use illusion to fight illusion. And this is exactly what the Buddha is doing here.
所以在这里边呢，就像佛其实是用各种方便善巧，就用一种的幻化的幻象去破除另外一种幻象一样。
Okay, so this is the first time in the sutra. Now the guide, once again, as a parable, has actually used magic to make the city appear. So in all the past parables, though they were mythic in proportion, they're at least in outer realms of ordinary reality, right? A burning house, a confused and depressed sun, and a great cloud of rain. It's not necessarily so magical, but a conjured city really is. So it's an entire illusion, a mirage, and it's been created to boost the flagging, the diminishing enthusiasm of the treasure hunters. So, and those are those treasure hunters are the ones who started out with the three vehicles, taking the right path, but once again, mistaking what really is a way station, just a stop on the road as the final destination. So the parable of the burning house made the three vehicles seem to be conjurations themselves. With the conjured city, the skillful means shows that the goals of the three vehicles were partially correct, perhaps somewhat distorted by illusion, but still the correct path.
所以在化成一品当中呢，这一品跟其他几种比喻有些不太一样的地方在于这一品这一个比喻它是直接显现神通，就是在路途当中幻化出这样一座城来给大家休息。而前几个玉品火宅玉啊，或者琼子玉或者药草玉品它可能还有一些现实的基础，就是我们可以想象的并不是直接直接神通就显现的这么清楚。那么在化成玉品当中也显示了这个佛在法华经以前显示的各种三圣修行的道路呢，也是正确，也是在路上的，只是不够就近而已。而不像在其他几个预言当中可能是指的他们是比较幻化的。
So, and one cautionary word about how we understand the Lotus Sutra. It is one of the most popular sutras in all of East Asia, especially in China, and really especially in Japan, where it's the subject of art and stories and a variety of other things. People have interpreted it in a variety of ways. And there's this thing called supersessionism, which means a feeling of superiority. Your view is superior to others. And people have used the one vehicle to disparage other vehicles. Some people include them. There's a whole variety of things. And I think it's important to look at this overview and see that as you're learning about it, as you're practicing on your own, to make sure not to get caught up in one of these sort of traps about feeling that your view, your way, one particular sect is superior to another.
像法华经呢，在中国和日本呢都非常的流行，所以有很多种解释的观点。当然在这里呢，我们要提醒大家，就是要特别注意，不要陷入一种好像觉得我的这一种解释的观点要比其他观点更好的这样一种陷阱。
So the important message that I get from the Conjured City parable is not to be fooled by seeming milestones, to not inflate your expectations, and to not get discouraged when your illusions are taken away from you. There is an assurance of true treasure, but it's not what you think it is at the present moment. Only by practicing with an open beginner's mind, faith, and the guidance of a true teaching like the Lotus Sutra can you attain true fulfillment. So it is up to all of us to see whether we're on the journey or we're fooled by a conjured city.
所以化成玉品这一品当中我在从中学到的重要的信息，重要的学到的佛法就是说，我们不要被自己的阶段性的成功或者成就呢迷惑了，不要把我们的预期显太高。然后呢，当我们知道自己的执着和自己知道自己的阶段性成功只是一种幻象的时候呢，也不要太灰心，因为不管最终这个佛果是什么样子，可能跟你想象最初想象是不一样的。那么只有以一种开放的始终一种初学者的心态和信心，在一个好的老师的指导下呢，不停的学习，这样呢才会最终有所成就。当然这就是取决于我们每一个人来审查自己是不是还走在修行这条路上，还是已经被一个幻化的一个阶段性的尘所迷惑了。
Okay, so that really is the conclusion, although Bob and Bill came in late, so I have to go over the first half an hour of the talk. Now. Just kidding. I want to thank you all for coming.
好，今天我们就讲到这里。嗯，谢谢大家。